Well, thank you very much, everyone, and good morning. And it's great to be part of the CEDA EPO Roadshow again this year. Now, one of Paul Keating's economic advisors tells this story about how they were sitting around his office one day and there was this sound of a branch snapping. And it turns out what it actually was the economy buckling under the 17% cash rate the Reserve Bank had just put in place, and which was followed in short order by the recession that we had to have in the early 1990s. And in some ways, the shift from sort of the reasonably positive views we saw about the Australian economy towards the end of last year compared with the pessimism that developed in the first few months of this year have some similarities. So the question that most economists are grappling with at the moment is, well, has that economic branch snapped again? Is some of the pessimism that we're seeing right now actually justified? Well, the recession that we had to have was, of course, the last time we had a recession in Australia, and that was over 27 years ago now. And if I'd spent the last 27 years on Mars and flew in this morning for this event, and the economists in the room pulled out the standard chart on the Australian economy, well, they'd show you something like this particular one here. And what you'd see is, well, the economy is in its 28th year of expansion. Growth is running at around about 2.75%, and that's what we tend to regard as normal for Australia these days. The unemployment rates fall under 5%, which is the number that most people tend to equate with full employment for Australia. We're seeing a little bit of a pickup in wages coming through at the moment. Inflation, though, remains below the Reserve Bank's 2-3% target band. Now, if we move beyond that and look at things like commodity prices, very important for Australia, well, they're at levels that are now generating lots of income for the Australian economy once more. We've seen the ratings agencies decide that we're actually a pretty safe AAA rating after all, despite the talk a year or so ago that maybe we were going to get downgraded. And we've got room to move on the policy space if something is actually going wrong in the economy. And if you tick away down that list, I mean, these are all good things. They certainly sit at odds, I think, with some of the gloom that's out there right now. Nevertheless, as I say, the pessimism about how we're going to travel over the next year has lifted, and you can see it's pretty clearly in measures of sentiment. So if you look at the blue line here, you can see the way business confidence has receded over the last 6 months or so, now at reasonably low levels. And the green line there, consumer confidence, well, it's very volatile. It's up one month and down the next. So we've certainly seen sort of confidence shift. And you can trace it back, I think, to really two broad sources here. And that is, firstly, there are now more concerns about the global economic backdrop. And the list there is a lengthy one. Now, what do you want to worry about? Trade wars, Brexit, the slowdown in the Chinese economy, and so on. There's a very long list of things that you could be concerned about. Domestically, it looks to be more to do with the concerns about high levels of household debt, falling house prices, and weak income growth. Now, these risks are real, but what I want to say, though, or the theme of my presentation is a lot of these concerns are overdone. We think the economy will actually turn in some reasonable economic outcomes this year. Now, policymakers have responded to these risks. They've shifted their guidance on interest rates, and essentially what we've seen here is the return of the two-handed central banker. So I think about Australia, the governor of our central bank spent most of last year saying, well, now, most likely the next move in interest rates will be up. He's now saying, yes, maybe they'll go up, but maybe they'll go down as well, or perhaps I'll just leave them where they are. So covers most possible outcomes. So very sort of two-handed view, and with four economists on our panels, we should get at least eight different views on everything when we get around to the discussion session later on. If you think about the global story, well, it is fair to say that we're moving away from the kind of synchronised upturn that characterised the last few years. It is going to be a more uneven experience, and you can see this in some of the data. The set of charts here, just to pick one or two examples, the green line on that chart, it shows you what they call an economic surprise index. So it measures whether the economic data is stronger or weaker than expected. Below zero, as it is now, it means the data is surprising on the downside. So indications there of the softening coming through. Policymakers are much more ambivalent about what they're going to do now, as I said, and so uncertainty about global economic policy, the middle panel there, is running at a record high as a result. What I look through to the linkage into Australia, though, in the business surveys the Commonwealth Bank runs, well, the final panel there shows you what's happening with expectations about export orders. that are holding up very well at the moment. So we haven't seen the pullback that would suggest those global concerns are translating into the Australian economy just yet. And if I turn to the domestic story, well, there are a lot of positives there. And again, I've got a set of charts here that to highlight what is going on. So we're getting a boost from resource exports, particularly from liquefied natural gas, as all those big gas plants are turned on. That's going to continue. The middle panel, plenty of infrastructure spending going on by the states around the country right now, and that's going to support economic activity over the next few years. But the last panel there is, I think, the interesting one in terms of where the opportunities may be. What it actually shows you is that per capita income in the Asian region is now above the global average for the first time. And if you multiply that by the 3.5 billion people in Asia, then you've got a very powerful spending force there. And you can see it playing out in Australia's case in driving the booms that we've been seeing in tourism and education, for example, with plenty more to come. So there are certainly still some positives in the growth story. And in fact, some of the risks I talked about when I was here last year now look less risky. And again, a couple of charts here, but perhaps just the one on the right-hand side to make the point. It shows you that after years of doing nothing, essentially, businesses decided over the last 12 months they were going to lift their capital spending. And all the forward kind of looking indicators there in terms of spending plans and so on look pretty positive overall. So that particular risk has receded. I think it's more when you come to the housing market and all that household debt and the consumer story that's tied in with that is where you start to see some real risks in the Australian economy. Where these risks are coming from is because a few years ago, the regulators became concerned about too much investor activity in the housing market, too much interest-only lending going on, and they took steps to fix a financial stability risk. Very successful. They've achieved what they set out to do. They've taken these regulations off. But part of what's happened here, I think, is that we've transformed a financial stability risk into a macroeconomic risk. And this chart here, I think, just highlights some of the points. So it shows you the composition of all of that housing debt that's out there. And you can see there's been a big reduction in the share of that debt that's interest-only lending, a big reduction in the amount that's been going to investors as well. Now, have we achieved these outcomes? Well, we've done it by encouraging a lot of people with interest-only loans to switch to principal and interest loans. And when they do that, they're discovering their repayments are going up by 30 to 40%. Now, of course, there's no way the income growth is compensating for that at the moment. And to the extent that people pay their mortgage first, it just means you've got less to spend elsewhere in the Australian economy. And we've created a consumer risk as a result. And you can see this happening in the sort of surveys, the information that we get from the CBA's balance sheet. So we can drill into that balance sheet and run a survey of around about 2.5 million households who are CBA customers and see what's happening with their spending, their income and the like. And some very high level outcomes from that survey you can see here. And I just highlight the green line, that's the consumer spending line. You can see the slowdown that's coming through at the end of the chart there. Also shows you, with the red line, of course, falling house prices means that wealth in Australia is now declining as well. Falling house prices, well, that is a newish risk in the story as well. But again, I think you can trace this back to regulation. And I borrowed this very interesting chart from the Reserve Bank, and what it shows you is the pink line, what's happening with house prices in those areas that are dominated by investor activity. The blue line's the rest of the market. And you can see a widening gap between those lines as those regulations targeting investors in particular took effect. And what it tells you is initially, at least, falls in house prices were a reflection of regulation. Now, the good news in that, it means the prices are falling not because there's some massive imbalance in the national housing market that's going to justify these 30 to 40% falls that you might see in the newspaper headlines from time to time. But nevertheless, once prices start falling, it does generate its own momentum, and further declines there are quite likely, we think. And of course, that creates a new risk in the story as well, that you can trace back to this attempt to fix a financial stability issue. Now, at some point, the demand comes back into the market and prices will stop falling. The leading indicators we track here are sending mixed signals at the moment, but there are some faintly encouraging signs on this front. And I'd just highlight the chart on the right-hand side here. It shows you what's happening with the hit rate on the home loan part of the CBA website. That's the red line. That probably tells you something about what economists do in their spare time. But the point being, though, that hit rate has stabilised, and typically 3 or 4 months later, you tend to see house price momentum moving in the same direction. So this may be an early sign that the bottom's not too far away. That's all fine, but demand may come back in and stabilise the market eventually, but it won't work if you can't get the finance. So there's a lot of concerns about the risk of a credit crunch right now as well. If banks won't lend, then potentially the housing market continues to deteriorate and the economy suffers from that. But again, I can show you a range of indicators from the CBA book that sit at odds with that. Again, I would just highlight one here, the first panel in this chart. What it actually shows you is the approval rate for home loans. So how many home loan applications actually get approved and go through to funding? Well, that line is up and down, but it's basically a flat trend. So the approval rate today is pretty much where it was a couple of years ago. So it certainly would have fallen if the banks weren't lending. So I think that's a good indication that if you want a home loan, you've still got a very good chance of actually getting one. Now, I did mention that wealth was falling because of lower house prices at the moment, and that brings yet another risk into the story, because quite often what happens is when wealth falls, people want to increase their savings to offset that loss of wealth. And the only way you can do that at the moment, of course, is by cutting your consumer spending further. Now, we didn't really think we were going to see much chance of a negative wealth effect, as it's called, money, because we didn't see a positive one when prices were rising. But given that, though, this chart here is a little bit concerning. It shows you what's happening with various aspects of consumer lending. And as you can see, some of those have gone off the edge of the proverbial cliff in the period that house prices have been falling. So again, it does suggest there's some negatives here playing out in the consumer space. So if you're looking for where the risks in the Australian story lie this year, watch the consumer very closely. What would help? Well, clearly a pickup in wages growth would be helpful. And we are seeing some tentative signs of wages picking up. But the other channel here is that we can influence household spending power by changing tax arrangements as well. And certainly we think some bigger tax cuts than those that are already on the books at the moment would be very helpful in terms of offsetting the risks that lie in the Australian story here. Now, I have focused on the risks today because that's obviously what we should be focusing on these sorts of events. But I don't want to downplay the fact that there are still a lot of positives at work, as I said at the start, and my conclusion is that some of the gloom that's out there right now is in fact overdone. And on that positive thought, I'll stop and I'll hand over to our next speaker, Rick.